part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Fanboy.com. So, shall we begin this interview?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome, awesome. Well, part-time fanboy goes internationally once again. we have the wonderful Jed McPherson back on the podcast. We had you last with you had a Kickstarter going on with Transmissions, right? That was the name of the project, correct?
Yep, that's right. Yep, with T-Pub.
T-Pub, yes. T-Pub Publishing and with Neil. I'm blanking out on Neil's last name right now. Neil. What was that?
Neil Gibson.
Neil Gibson. Yes, yes. Yeah. Neil Gibson. I'm going to edit that out so that Neil doesn't get mad at me. I actually had lunch with him in November when I was in the UK, so I don't want him being upset with me. Very nice man. Very nice man.
He is.
He is. But this is not for that. This is not through T-Pub. You have, as of right now, it is late January. We are recording early, but you have another Kickstarter coming. We should just let the people know right off the bat what we're here for, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm doing a Kickstarter for the show, which is a 4-issue miniseries that I've been self-publishing for just about 2.5 years now.
Oh, nice.
We're bringing it to Kickstarter. It's a reality TV satire. I always describe it as it's a little bit like The Truman Show if The Truman Show was run by Hunter S. Thompson. So it's like deranged, drug-fueled, hallucinogenic take on reality TV, where they take a man, lock him in a room, and film him going mad.
Nice, nice. Now, is this the project that Neil sort of discovered you with, like at a convention? In our previous interview, we kind of talked about that.
No, that was a crime one-shot that I did with an artist called Chris Sheehan.
Okay.
This was what I was working on sort of concurrently to Transmissions. This was my other book that I was doing then.
Gotcha. So I actually just finished reading it this morning. As of right now, it is noon on the west coast of the United States. And what time is it there right now? It must be 8-ish?
Yep, that's right.
Nice.
8 o'clock.
Nailed it. I remembered my time zones. I just finished reading it this morning, and I actually really enjoyed this. It was a lot of fun. It had, like you said, it's a reality TV show mix up. It reminded me a little bit of Old Boy. Little bit. It has a little bit of that in there, which was kind of cool. Obviously you said The Truman Show, and there's a lot of there's a dream sequence, which is really fun. I have a question for you right off the bat. You been to LA? Because there's a couple of LA things in here, and I was like, Jed must have come to LA at some point.
I have never actually been to America, never mind.
Oh, really?
LA, I think LA is one of those cities that you can experience from a distance, what with it being so integral to the film and TV industry.
if you say so. All right, go ahead. No.
Yeah. I mean, I could be completely off on that. I mean, like every time I see anybody with a British accent in a film, I'm always like, oh, that's completely wrong. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, well, not always, but like...
Not even Meryl Streep gets it right?
I'm blanking on when she's done a British accent.
Didn't she play Thatcher?
Pardon?
Didn't she play Thatcher in a movie, Margaret Thatcher?
Oh. I have not seen that.
oh, you missed out. Anyway, sorry.
At the risk of getting political, anything with Margaret Thatcher in is a hard no for me.
yeah, sure. I understand. Same with Reagan here. yeah.
Yes.
But that's interesting because you had a lot of like really solid takes on sort of like the TV industry and kind of like what LA is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I have a semi background in news, so like a lot of it's based on I mean, I did my a postgraduate in journalism, and we had to run a news show as part of that. So a lot of the TV stuff comes from that, and I used to, when I was a student, obsessively watch Charlie Brooker's Newswipe and Screenwipe, which they cover a lot of like the insider terms and stuff like that. So
Oh, so
that's
what
where
is
that
that? Is that like
kind
a
of comes
news
up.
show or something, or Charlie Brooker? I don't know it.
So Charlie Brooker is the, have you watched Black Mirror?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well,
Oh,
Black, yes. Yeah. So he's the guy that does that. But before, well, way back when, he was a video games journalist, but then he did a show, like a review show about telly.
Oh, okay.
And it's all on YouTube. I highly recommend it. Some of it's like a little bit out of date now, but it's got all these really interesting explorations of how TV's made, where TV can be better, what are the problems of it, and stuff like that. So
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I have to check that out. I did not know. And it's interesting, I didn't just recognize his name off the bat because I really like Black Mirror. It's a great show.
yeah,
You must like Black
yeah, no,
Mirror
he.
too because of the stuff that you write.
I really badly have only seen like two episodes of it.
Oh, that's enough. Sometimes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
like I saw the one with the Prime Minister, and the one with the treadmill, which I really enjoyed. But with them being like done in ones, it's very easy to walk away and like be like, oh, I'll check that out later, and
Sure,
then
sure,
never
sure.
get to it. It's in my Netflix queue.
Yeah. Well, for me, the big thing is like if you get past the Prime Minister episode, you can get past anything. Like, yeah, it's a pretty rough watch sometimes, but
Yeah.
no, it's a great show. But let's stop talking about Black Mirror and let's talk about I was going to say your show, but the show.
Yes.
Yeah, I've already said like a little bit of Old Boy, a little bit of the things that you had sort of like pointed out. But why don't you sort of flesh out the general idea to give listeners like what it is without spoiling too much? Because it's kind of hard to explain what it is without kind of spoiling the whole thing, I would think, right? How do you pitch
Yeah,
that?
definitely. I always like just try and keep everything to the first issue, because things take a turn after that that I think a lot of people don't expect. But yeah, like it's about a it's a like I say, it's a reality TV satire where they're filming a man as he goes mad, locked in a room. It's a lot of about the effects of isolation. At one point, he gets this teddy bear that he starts talking to,
Yeah, that's great.
and then he absolutely freaks out when the teddy starts talking back to him. Yeah, it's basically it's a lot about the subtle manipulations and sometimes unsubtle manipulations that TV producers do to create drama on reality TV programs. I think there's a massive misconception that like reality TV is reality, it's filmed, and as soon as you start editing something, you're telling a story, and they go beyond that a lot of times by forcing confrontations, changing things around so that someone who might actually look like a good guy and is made into a villain, and things like that. So it's really the first issue at least is very much an exploration of that. With a heavy dose of like media satire, we've got like these ad sequences, which I think are really fun, where we're like selling products from the show. We're not actually selling them, but it's like in-universe adverts for products from the show. Yeah, it's a weird one, I think. It is a difficult one to explain in a couple of sentences, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I very much enjoyed reading it, but it's interesting that we're sort of getting into the discussion of like reality TV and what it is because I can't remember if I was watching an interview or listening to an interview on a podcast, and it was an interview with someone from the UK. Again, I can't remember who it was, but they were sort of talking about the whole reality TV phenomenon, and where we have like sort of like Survivor, and what is the other one where there's like a bunch of people locked in an apartment, and I don't watch that stuff, so I'm
I mean, we have
Big Brother,
which is
yeah, and that was kind of like sort of like your invention, correct? Like stuff like that, like that came from the UK originally. Am I right about that, or?
I believe the Big Brother was from one of the Nordic countries.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely made it, you know, like took it and ran with it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I was watching an episode of John Oliver, and apparently there's a show over there where it's like watching people react to watching TV. I don't know.
Gogglebox.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh my god, like we've completely gone through the looking glass, like it's amazing. And it's funny because during this interview with the person from the UK, they were talking, it was a comedian again, can't remember who, and they were saying something to the effect of like, oh, the British are like so amazing at comedy, and he, and the interviewee was kind of being like, yeah, well, you don't see kind of like all the crap that like comes through, you know, as you know, either. So, but it's just interesting to me how we sort of like have taken like the reality TV thing and maybe glossed it over. But I mean, from what I understand, the stuff that happens on UK and European TV might even be more hardcore than what American audiences are used to, right?
Well, I guess so. I mean, I don't know what the reality shows in America are like.
Well, I think there's more nudity and sex and stuff like that. Am I correct or incorrect?
Possibly. I mean, like Big Brother always had like a ton of sex stuff on those. Like,
yeah, we don't have that.
But yeah, like we, I mean, like I think there's definitely like an element of like just that it all bleeds into one. Like we have the there's a show called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, where we get sort of like Z-list to sort of low rent celebrities and make them like live in a jungle, and they have to eat like weird stuff to get food, like kangaroo testicles, live bugs, that sort of
wow
stuff.
I
definitely feel like has taken something from Fear Factor as like a show.
Sure. That was a low,
But like you were saying with Gogglebox, there's this weird like snake eating its tail of reality TV, where you have like someone from the, so one of the people from Gogglebox was on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and then you had the people from Gogglebox watching the person from Gogglebox on this other TV program, and it's like this really peculiar thing. But I think definitely recently there's been more of a push towards like genuinely nice reality TV programs as well. So you've got stuff like The Great British Bake Off, which is just like wholesome reality TV.
We love that.
It's a strange industry.
Sure. Were you ever involved in that industry in any way? Like, did that inspire you, or did what you pulled from this come from just the stuff that you've watched on, you know, TV?
Yeah. So, like very tangentially, I was in sort of news for a little bit before I realized I really didn't like it, but I've never worked in like entertainment TV or anything like that.
Sure.
But yeah, like it, you have a lot of like crossover between like people working in that sort of stuff who you know, like a lot of the terms are the same and things.
Well, news has become entertainment, correct? I mean, that's kind of like what's been happening in the past whatever 20-30 years, I would imagine. But I mean, so I mean, to talk about the sort of plot of this comic again without trying to spoil it, we've sort of got a guy in a room, like we've got some interesting characters. We have like a the producer of the show, who's a dude who's like, you know, he's kind of like, seems like a punk rock, like type of guy with a mohawk and everything, and he's like hardcore, doesn't wear a shirt, kind of screams at the TV trying to get the guy who's locked in the room to do something or hope that he does something. And then we have his assistant, who is in the nurse's outfit. She's in a nurse's outfit, and she's kind of wears like sort of like a mask over her face, and she is sort of like the only person who it's kind of like a sexy nurse's outfit, like garter belts and stuff like that, and a mini skirt. But she's sort of the only one who is able to interact with the guy locked in the room, right? Like, she gives him food and like hoses him down brutally, so he can, you know, have a bath and stuff like that. Do you want to talk a little bit about these characters? Because I found them to be particularly interesting, especially as the sort of book moved on.
Yeah, sure. So starting with the producer, I deliberately decided to not give him a name.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like the whole thing, like you were talking about Big Brother earlier on. It's like, who's the person who created Big Brother? Do we know who that is? I mean, like, reality TV is one of the few mediums where the author is sort of unimportant. So that was like a deliberate choice to not give him a name. Nursey is kind of put in there as a commentary on the way these kind of shows over sexualize and objectify their any female who's involved in it. That was sort of the two distinct approaches that I took to those two characters. It's this whole push and pull behind, like, you've got this really angry man who has this sort of like god complex, but he is never gonna get any kind of fame or he's not the star, even though he's like possibly the biggest character in the entire book. So that was sort of the approach that I took for those two.
Yeah, no. And so, but what is the sort of reasoning behind him sort of being this sort of like punk rock character? He's got like the belt with the spikes, and it looks like kind of like leather pants and, you know, a mohawk, and being sort of like a, I don't know what, who would it be, like Johnny Rotten or something like that, like type of character where, and he's very sort of protective of his show, right? So this thing is set, I would imagine, in the near future or something like that. It's not set in the present. So how, what is your vision of TV? Like, how do you see, like, is this like a YouTube thing? Is he like singular? He obviously answers to somebody. What are the thoughts of like behind making this character sort of like a, you know, what we would call a punk rock character?
Yeah, I mean, like, part of that is trying to make it visually interesting. You know, like, if he was just a dude in a suit, it would be much more boring for Joseph and Robert to draw. I originally, I believe in the original script. When I was originally like pitching the book to Joseph, I had him as a bald man, like just a golem-y kind of creature. And he added the mohawk to give him a little bit more of a interesting silhouette. I think like the idea, a lot of it came from like simplifying things. So like punk was very much a response to like prog rock and things like that, where they were taking these really complicated setups of shows and these really complicated songs that were like 10 minutes long, and they all had like things, and they were knocking them down to like 3 minutes, three chords, shouting. When I conceived the idea of the show within the show, it was very much it's a stripped down version of reality TV. It's one man, one room, no tasks, no nothing like that. It's like a punk rock version of reality TV. And it makes sense to have a punk be the face of that.
Well, what's funny about that too is how much like sort of punk has maybe come around a bit to where it's become mainstream, and so you've got like this punk rock sort of figure who's supposed to be like anti-establishment, anti-society, all that sort of stuff, coming around and creating the ultimate establishment, you know, pro TV sort of thing for the masses, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, like punk, any kind of things as people get older and stuff, like what is transgressional becomes the mainstream. Like, you know, I've been watching a lot and reading a lot about gangster rap at the moment, and you know, like Ice Cube when he was in NWA was like chased out of Detroit by the police. And now he's on Law and Order.
Yeah.
Which is bonkers, like, as a thing. Johnny Rotten was a couple of years ago doing butter adverts in the UK.
That's amazing.
You know, like, everything sort of gravitates towards acceptance, I believe. Like, you know, in the far future, we'll probably have, like, YouTube stars. PewDiePie will be doing something, you know, I don't know, something ridiculous like
adult diapers.
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah. No, it's really, I sort of like the sort of commentary that kind of like comes around as you're reading it, and he is sort of like a very vicious seeming character, but then like as you get towards the end and things start to develop, he sort of tries to become like the voice of reason. I should also say, for anybody listening, somebody started mowing their lawn outside of my so if you're picking up a lawnmower in the background, that's what it is. I apologize. There's nothing I can do about it. But in any case, yeah, no, I do think that you know, that it's a very sort of interesting development where he is very much like, you know, angry sort of punk rocker. And then at the end, you know, again, not to spoil anything, he's sort of like, hey, like, you know, let's listen to reason. This is sort of like all in the service of, you know, what we're trying to do here. And you signed a contract and blah, 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 like that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was very much me consciously trying to. I mean, the obvious thing to do would be have a violent confrontation between the two at the end. I feel like a conversation is a much more interesting way of taking that without getting into spoilers as to what they're talking about.
Sure.
Yeah, like it's very, that was very much deliberate. You know, like you can hurt somebody more with words sometimes than you can with violence, I believe.
Well, sure, and it's also very much like a sort of psychological drama too, because obviously you said you're sort of like dealing with isolation, and how much do people want to be free on their own, or how much do they want to be dictated to, correct?
Yeah, definitely. The idea is like a lot of it was that the characters have, like, because of the setup of the show, there's only one conversation, only a few conversations, and they all happen in the last issue.
Yeah.
A lot of the time it's people talking to themselves or talking to, you know, possibly imaginary characters. There's only like a couple of real conversations, which very much and they're all conversations that take place when the cameras aren't running. Which was kind of deliberate, because it's, you know, like, can you have a legitimate conversation with people who are when it's for entertainment purposes?
Sure.
Like it's a difficult question to like answer.
Yeah. No, I mean, this, I mean, the whole thing is sort of very much a commentary on TV and particularly, like you mentioned the advertisements before. I really like the bits about like, hey, you have this, and oh no, wait, there's a better one, and now you can do this with it if only you buy this, and you only are really loved if you, you know, children, your parents will only really love you if you buy this version of this. And it's very much sort of like keeping up with the Joneses commentary as well. I really enjoyed that.
Oh yeah, definitely. And the other thing about like doing a satire of advertisements is that you can be so on the nose, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the rest of the book is very much like trying to be not realistic, but trying to, you know, have its commentary not be out and out in your face. But when you get to the advertisements, you can just really cut loose and be like, this is bad because consumerism is bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of like, I mean, you've heard of The Onion, correct? Like the online sort of like news where their headline is like, The Onion collapses because we can't come up with anything more ridiculous than what's already happening, you know?
Yes, I mean, that's a difficult thing. It's satirizing the unsatirizable. Have you ever read a book by Sam Humphries, and I'm blanking on the artist, called Citizen Jack?
No.
Right. So Citizen Jack was a book that was coming out just prior to when Trump got elected.
Okay.
And it's about this like really arrogant, horrible snowplow salesman who sells his soul to the devil to become president of America.
Oh wow!
And they had to stop making it because reality just got too mad for them. Like
really?
What they were doing wasn't kept up with by. It was just outstripped by what was going on in real life. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And, yeah. And so like how much reality TV did you sort of have to watch? Like, did you have to inundate yourself with this sort of stuff to sort of like break this thing down? Or was that too much of a risk for your brain?
I didn't watch very much of it at all, to be fair.
Oh, okay.
But, like I read a lot about it. And sort of, absorbed it that way, like third party, like, because the thing about reality TV is so much of it, like nothing happens.
Yeah.
So like I kind of cheated a little bit and just like really went in on the Wikipedia articles and the coverage of it and stuff like that. But yeah. Like I've been aware of like I watched I've seen like some of Big Brother. I've like watched a bunch of it was always background noise when I was like growing up.
Sure.
Like you hear about like, you know, you see the worst of it like regurgitated through the news and things. But yeah, it was not something that I watched a lot of while making the show.
Sure. Yeah. The one thing that I very much like is sort of also the producer's constant sort of thing of like, is he going to do something? Like, what is going on? Like the producer's desire to sort of like make things happen, and then his sort of like own psychological justification for like how ratings will get pulled in when the subject of the show is not necessarily doing something. Am I making any sense?
Yeah. There's a monologue that starts the third issue, which I think is that's what you're referring to. Like, I think obviously, like you'll be aware of like The Bachelor.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So like there's a season of The Bachelor where about halfway through the show, The Bachelor escapes. He jumps over the wall of the compound in which they're filming the show and just runs off.
He just takes off? He just didn't want to be on it anymore?
And sort of like the reason behind this, it's really interesting because he had worked out the way the show was working in the way that they were manipulating him. So like what they were basically doing is like they were getting him to rank the women in, this is such an awful thing that people were doing, but they were getting him to rank like the women in the show by how she was attracted to them.
Sure.
And then like they would take his top pick and like mess with it, you know, like build the show around trying to make it so that, you know, putting up blocks in the like putting up barricades in the way of them like getting together or whatever. So like he realized that like every time he like changed his rankings they would like start messing with it, so he just like kept them the same all the way through. But it eventually meant that they got rid of the girl that he was actually like genuinely interested in.
Like
I think they voted her off or something like that, and he like he was genuinely falling in love with this woman. So when she, when they were like, oh, we're gonna get rid of her, he just bolted. Like he,
wow,
he had like this, I'm not sure if it's a breakdown or whatever, but like he like ran away and they had to like get the police to like help find him, and they did this whole like search over this island and stuff like that.
Oh wow, I've never even heard of this. Of course I don't watch The Bachelor, so I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, and like when they were advertising, you know, when they were advertising that season of The Bachelor, that scene of him escaping was like all over the adverts. They were like taking advantage of it, but it was all marketing. Like they couldn't tell the actual story of what was going on, because that would be A, admitting that they're, you know, manipulating the show to get, you know, to get more viewers, or B, they were like, you know, just they basically broke this man down. So they were like, they had to completely change the way, and that really got me thinking about how they market, how you would market a show where the person who you are filming isn't doing what you want him to do, or isn't doing anything interesting. And it's also kind of weirdly ties into like fight promotion. So like you have like way back when you had like someone like Mike Tyson, or perhaps more appropriately you have Floyd Mayweather, like these people who people want to see get beaten. And you're not marketing it because you want to see this guy beat somebody. You take the opposite approach. You market them as somebody who you want to see get, like, you know, you want somebody to knock them out, not them knock somebody else out. Like Floyd Mayweather's like bad guy persona, like really plays into that. So I was just trying to think of how somebody would market something like that, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, that completely makes sense. I mean, that it's one of the things that I found fascinating, because I mean, I think a lot of people, for lack of a better term, might see reality TV as like sort of like improv TV, like, oh, it just happens, and you know, they edit around it and stuff like that. And you and I both know that that's sort of like not the case. Like, as you said, the whole example of The Bachelor is, you know, it, I mean, that's like perfect, you know. And my wife tends to be a fan of Survivor, you know, and I kind of got bored with that show several years ago, but I'll be in the room, you know, drawing or whatever, and, you know, watching with her, and, you know, I'll just like, it'll be noise for me. You know, we've seen shows or documentaries or that go through, and it's like, oh yeah, here's the challenge that they have to go through. And it's like cut and stop, and you know, and it's interesting to me how in this, where you have like a guy in the room, and at one point he's just like, you know, and I don't think I'm spoiling anything, he sort of very much is like, I'm just gonna stop, you know what I mean, and you know, doing anything. And so at first the guy freaks out, but to me what was interesting about that is how he justifies it in his head, like, oh no, this will be good, because then people will say, like, you know, and it's it, it, people will say, like, what's he going to do? He's not doing anything, like, you know, and yeah. And they'll tune in to watch
Will this be the episode where Johnny TV finally moves?
yeah. And it's just, and to me, that sort of like bit of business or dialogue or whatever is like perfection, because it really sort of encapsulates the sort of corporate or, you know, whatever it is, idea of sort of like, okay, nothing's really bad. We'll just make it good. And, you know, even if it really is bad, am I making sense?
Yeah, it's the whole make lemonade approach to TV. Yeah, like,
yeah, but in a sick way, not like in the sort of like be positive, yeah. You know?
Yeah, definitely. Everything is exploitable.
Yes, that's it. That's what I was looking for. You nailed it on the head. So talk to me a little bit about, because I mean, I should say that there is a bit of an artist shift in sort of like the issue. I mean, it looks like you sort of had an artist that started with the first issue and then he was not able to sort of finish, but then you got another artist and the style changes a little bit towards sort of like a Bruce Timm like sort of style, like for the last three issues. But do you want to talk a little bit about that just so people know?
Yeah, sure. So like we started the issue with Joseph Velasquez, who is he's a really, really good artist, but like drawing comics is a lot of work.
And
like he just didn't have the bandwidth to continue making the book. I think like so we launched the first book February 2018 and he started then it took a year and we'd got about halfway through pencils of the second issue. Oh, obviously that's not an ideal time frame to be releasing a monthly book.
Sure.
Not necessarily a monthly book, but you know, like a 4-issue miniseries. And it became obvious to him, and it became obvious to me that like it just wasn't, you know, this book was never going to get finished. And he stepped away from the project. Luckily, we landed on our feet with Robert, who. I was aware of his work from a really good book by Matt Garvey and Robert and himself called Devil in Disguise.
Okay.
And he came in and really just blew me away with like his take on like these characters. He's got this really nice like you said, like this Bruce Timm like kind of style, Bruce Timm, Darwin Cook.
Yeah.
Like classic cartoonist style, which it is absolutely perfect for the show, and really, really just saved us. He came in, and I think like after, I think it was like a month after that we made the artist switch, we already had issue two in the bank. We did keep the same colorist to try and have like some continuity going across it, but
sure,
I mean, the best option was rather than Robert doing an impression of Joseph was to just do his own take on it. But yeah, like he really just saved us. And like he has this really incredibly expressive style, which really works with the book, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because there's a shift, but sort of like once you get used to it, it's not too drastic a shift and you're sort of just like, oh, okay, the artist changed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know that sort of like the prevailing wisdom these days is like, you can't have two different artists, you know, on the same project, you know, the readers don't like it, but you know, I mean, there is a shift, but it's not like, something that makes me want to just like, you know, throw my hands up in the air and be like, what happened? Like, you know, when I was a kid and I was reading whatever, the Fantastic Four, John Byrne, and, you know, they would have a fill-in artist, I would get like really upset because I was, you know what I'm saying? But this particular series is not necessarily branded on one artist, correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's not ideal.
Sure, but
you know, like,
it's indie comics, people. Come on.
It is. Yeah. And there was part of me that felt like going back and getting Robert to do the first issue for the Kickstarter.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But, I mean, comics are expensive to make.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe it's a stretch goal. We might add that in. Who knows?
Oh, gotcha. That's clever. That would be a clever. That's funny. And did you go to publishers with this? Did you go to TeePub or anybody else? Or this is very much sort of like on your own. You're kind of like striking out on your own.
I mean, we pitched it around a little bit. But it was very much like in its early development, and we were sending it like directly into like slush piles and stuff like that. So, we did pitch it, but you know, it's so difficult to stand out from, you know, the crowd as far as like, I think you get like a couple of seconds to really impress somebody in a thing. And we didn't, there was always the idea, like, we're making this no matter what. Like, I didn't pitch it to TeePub, though I don't necessarily think it's the kind of thing that Neil is interested in.
Oh, really? It kind of seems like very up his alley. I'm surprised.
No, like, he... like...
It seems kind of like Twilight Zone-y, sort of, you know, alternate reality sort of thing, and that seems to be the sort of thing that he's kind of into. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, mostly in terms of, like, I don't think he would have liked the ending of it. I think it's a little too ambiguous for, like, Neil's particular sensibilities. Like, like, Neil's approach to books a lot of the time is leave no reader behind.
Sure.
And I feel like the show might leave a few people, like, scratching their heads, if that makes sense. Like,
sure.
Yeah. They may have published it, but it would have been a different book to what it actually was. Neil's books.
No, I totally understand. I'm not trying to, like, box you into criticizing Neil Gibson, like, at all, you know. No, and obviously not. No criticism towards him. I mean, I love his stuff, but it definitely seemed to me like, oh, wow, this would kind of fit. But I understand your sort of thing, because there are a lot of, like, ambiguous elements, you know, in here. And definitely there's a little bit of it that reminds me of Transmetropolitan in a way.
There is a lot of Transmetropolitan in that book. Definitely. Transmetropolitan is my favorite comic of all time. Yeah, it was the comic that made me into a comic reader. Obviously I'm a huge like Warren Ellis fan and a Derek Robertson fan. But also like I'm a huge Hunter S. Thompson fan, and Transmet takes so much from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is a comic book about, but with a political, like, not that, obviously Hunter S. Thompson was hugely political, but you know, like he did Fear and Loathing on the campaign trail, but it was like, it was like Fear and Loathing on the campaign trail with a gun that made people poo themselves. That's that's such a cross section of who I was when I read it. Like it has stuck with me massively. That is definitely in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so is that sort of the thing that you sort of find yourself wanting to drift towards as you write, like, or create comics?
I'm all over the place when I'm creating comics.
Sure.
You know, like,
that's a good place. That's a good place to be.
Yeah. So like a lot of people who are aware of my work are aware of my work for a book called Deadbeat, which is, like just a straight crime story. Like it's very not like bells and whistly, not weird at all. Then you've got like Transmissions, which is, it's like a spy story, like, and then you've got the show, which is a bit weird and a bit unusual. Like, I'm trying not to pigeonhole myself into one like particular genre, but there's definitely, you know, I like writing straight crime stories. I like writing stuff like Transmetropolitan, stuff like the show as well. Sure.
Oh, that's great. I mean, because that's sort of like very much what I thought about when I read this. And obviously there's I'm a big movie fan too, and Old Boy was like the thing. I'm like, we've got a guy locked in a room, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. So I mean, you've definitely got some pretty amazing influences going on here for sure.
Yeah. I do think the show is a book that does wear its influences on the sleeve. Like, obviously, sure. Everyone picks up on the Old Boy influence. Anyone who's read Transmet picks up on that. And anyone who has watched The Truman Show, like, we're not shying away from being like a mashup of all these different genres and all these different creators.
Sure.
And like you say, like, there's a bit of Bruce Timm and a bit of Darwin Cook on the art side of stuff as well. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, for the complexity of the sort of like themes that you're kind of throwing in here and stuff like that, and not to disparage the artist's work, because I'm not in any way, I actually really like the art, the sort of like simplicity of the line and the directness of the sort of like panels and stuff, very much sort of counterbalances, you know, or balances really well with the writing. Am I making any sense there?
Yeah, I definitely.
I think it works.
I think
it makes it more accessible in a way. Am I making, yeah, does that make sense?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
It makes it more accessible in a way to me, the art, yeah. You know?
Yeah. I mean, Robert's like work is just, it's incredibly expressive.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a sequence where Johnny's just sitting on a bed not doing anything.
Yeah.
And in a, like, if you drew that like hyper realistic, it would be a really boring page. But the way that the sort of Robert's cartooning style really makes it pop. It really makes it you know, like, you feel what Johnny's feeling in a way that if it was, you know, just like real, like hyper realistic, it wouldn't necessarily. So I do think it complements the story in a way that really adds to things. And like Joseph's drawing, like the first issue as well, like he frequently distorts his characters when they're getting angry, like their heads get bigger and stuff like that. And
yeah,
I think that really helps to sell like some of the moments as well. Like in a way that, like, if you had somebody who was drawing it more, you know, photorealistic, it wouldn't necessarily play as well.
Sure. So to sort of like round off this podcast in a way, what are your general thoughts, and maybe this is too broad a question, on television, on entertainment? I mean, obviously you sort of have a point of view, you know, the show kind of addresses it a little bit of reality TV, but like, what is your view on where entertainment is, where it's headed? What are some of your thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, sure. So like, I'll start by just addressing reality TV, where I believe it could be kinder.
Sure.
I really like what the Great, I've mentioned it before, but the Great British Bake Off is doing, where it's presenting this drama in a way that isn't hurting the people who are making it. You know, it's not relying on cheap laughs against people who are having difficulty in a really, like, a really stressful environment. I think if people have a little bit more empathy for the reality TV stars, then I think the world would, well, or at least the world of reality TV would be in a much better place. I don't think it's bad as a rule. I just think the way that we are making it makes it bad. Where TV, I don't think TV has ever been better than it is right now. You know, the fact that everybody can have a show that seems to be tailor-made for them. You know, like, streaming networks have just like opened it up that so that even if you don't like, say, Breaking Bad or Mindhunter or whatever the latest, the TV show is, you can find something that you're probably going to like, or you're probably going to find some kind of representation in there. I think we're living through one of the golden ages of TV, where interesting creators are doing interesting things constantly, so much so it's difficult to keep up with it all.
Sure. I was going to ask you, I just finished it like last week, and it's one of my favorite, probably second to Breaking Bad at this point, like right now. But have you ever watched Mr. Robot?
I have not, no.
So good.
I see Dave Cook, the Killtopia guy. He's constantly posting about how good that show is.
It's so good.
I'm really bad when it comes to TV. I just watch the same shows again and again.
Yeah. You obviously like Breaking Bad because you mentioned it.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Breaking Bad. I still am. I'm rewatching The Wire for like the 100th time at the moment.
Oh, I don't know why. I everyone says like that's the greatest show, and I watched the first season, and I got to like the last episode, and I got distracted, and I never went back to it. And I don't understand like why I can't. Everyone's like it's the most amazing, and I'm like I don't know why I just don't get hooked in. Like I don't. I'm not saying it's bad. I actually think all the performances and everything, but there's just something in it that just does not like. Just like grab me and just be like, you have to watch this. So I don't know. Maybe there's something wrong with me.
I don't know. I think like The Wire as a TV show doesn't use like cliffhangers very well. Like, it's more like chapters of a novel than like episodes of TV. Like it's not concerned with getting you to keep coming back again and again. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. But you know, like it doesn't. I mean, it occasionally does, but it's not like, you know, like Breaking Bad, for example. Like it has this like momentum to it.
Yeah.
Whereas like The Wire, because it's such an ensemble cast, like it doesn't build up that sort of inevitability until like some of its later seasons. So I think that might have something to do with it. I definitely think it's like it's worth persevering with. Like there are moments of tragedy in that show that like still like, I mean, I've seen it like I've watched like it like 15 times. Like every single time I watch it, like it punches me in the gut. Yeah, like it's a really good show.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Robot is the only show where I just finished it. So there's only like, I tend to watch TV shows and not go back to them. Like I stopped buying like seasons of TV shows like years ago because I just was like, nothing's going to sort of match the experience of having watched them in the beginning, you know? But there are only two things that I've ever watched where I was like, immediately I wanted to go back and like start rewatching from the beginning. One of them was Mr. Robot. I'm like, oh man, I almost like want to go. I don't have time, but there is a desire for me. And then there was there was an old anime, I want to say from the 90s or 2000s, from Satoshi Kon called Paranoia Agent.
And, I love that show.
Oh, have you seen that? Oh yeah. My God. When it ended, I was like, I think I want to go back, and I never went back to it. And it's weird because the DVD is like out of print. Luckily I have them, but they're out of print, you know?
Oh man, that sucks. Cause it's, you know, it is a great show. I can totally understand why you want to like go back and revisit that, because when I first watched it, I got to the end and was like, I have vague ideas of what's happened.
But it was so compelling, right? Where it was like, oh my God, that's great. That's great that you know what that is. That's awesome. We are simpatico. Yes. You and I.
I really want to go and watch Mr. Robot now.
Oh my God. Mr. Robot, I'm not going to tell you anything about it. avoid anything you've ever, you know, avoid spoilers, avoid, because it is a show that is just going to take you for a ride. And then I think it was this last season was the fourth one. And you get to a point in the final episodes where you're just like, what did you just do? Did you just fuck up this show? And then it's like, no, you didn't. But what they did was so bold that it's just like, you know, I can't criticize this. Like, it's amazing. So, yeah. Like, I don't know if you've ever watched a TV show, and it happens to me a lot where you know, I guess, you know, the term is jumps the shark, right?
Oh, and yeah.
And to me, like, there's something that happens towards the end of Mr. Robot where I was like, did we just jump the shark? And I like went into a panic. Like I was like, I've been watching the show and it's been amazing. And I think we just jumped the shark. And so I was like, no, I got to calm down. And it didn't jump the shark at all. It became like this beautiful thing. So like, yeah, you got to watch it. It's amazing.
I will do. about done with my rewatch of The Wire, so once I've done that, I'll be looking for
jump to Mr. Robot. All right, yeah. Well, I will let you go watch your rewatch of The Wire. you're going to be on Kickstarter starting which date? Because that's the date that I'm probably going to put this up, the day that launches.
So we're going live on the 3rd.
Okay, February.
Yes. So I believe that's a Monday. If it's not, I have made a massive mistake.
No, it's on a Monday. I just checked. It's Monday. Yeah.
So we're going live then, and I am absolutely dreading it because Kickstarters are the most stressful thing you can imagine doing.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever do one for any of my own. I just can't. I can't. I don't have the emotional bandwidth. But yeah, so wait, February 3rd, and go to Kickstarter, and is there a direct link, like Kickstarter/the show or something, or do we know yet?
I don't believe there is, but if you go to my Twitter, I will definitely have like be tweeting.
Okay, and what's your Twitter? Let people know what your Twitter is.
@JedMcPherson.
Okay.
Pretty easy to find. Yeah.
Well, I'll link to all that stuff when this goes up. But
yes. Yeah, and I'll retweet the heck out of it because.
Well, I really appreciate you getting back in touch with me, Jed. I mean, it was a great first interview, and I like the stuff that you do a lot. I like the show a lot. This is a really fun read, and if you're into all the different kinds of things that we've been talking about, Transmetropolitan, Old Boy, Mr. Robot, The Wire, I guess, you know, even
maybe
though I have...
The Wire is more close to Transmissions, I believe, in
sure. Well, in any case, definitely check out Jed McPherson's work. I enjoyed it, and I think you will too. Check on our website, parttimefanboy.com, and there will be links to the Kickstarter, or you could go straight to Kickstarter and look up the show. You can look up Jed McPherson. It'll all be there. But thank you again for getting on the line with me. You're welcome back anytime.
Yeah.
And, once again, this is Part Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn. You could check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.com.